So I'd like to welcome you all to our weekly Krishna Fest here in San Diego on this 26th day of September 2010. And tonight we'll be speaking a little bit about the concept of artha in Sanskrit, which means generally things that we value. It's often translated as money, but it can mean many other things. So I'd like to first share with you a verse from the Bhagavad Gita as it is, translation and commentary by Srila Prabhupada, our spiritual master. And this is from chapter 8, called Attaining the Supreme, text 15. And he says, Krishna says here, Mamu pecha puna janma dukalayam ashvatam napnavanti mahatmana sangsiddhim padamamgata. After attaining me, the great souls who are yogis in devotion never return to this temporary world, which is full of miseries, because they have attained the highest perfection. And Srila Prabhupada explains in his purport or commentary, since this temporary material world is full of the miseries of birth, old age, disease, and death, naturally, one who achieves the highest perfection and attains the supreme planet, Krishna Loka, or Goloka Vrindavan, and does not wish to return. The supreme planet is described in the Vedic literature as Avyakta and Akshara and Padamangati. In other words, that planet is beyond our material vision, and it is inexplicable. But it is the highest goal, the destination of the Mahatmas or great souls. So then Srila Prabhupada goes on to explain how we understand how to get to that point. Now, this is a value, this is something of value that I think most people don't even think about. So let's look at some of the things that we may value in this world. This would be called a swa-artha, an artha or something of value that is something that the soul will aspire to, that very essence of our being. But there are other kinds of values. As I mentioned, artha itself can simply mean money. Now, this is something that practically universally is revered. Why? Because it is a means by which we can attain other things of value. Basically, food and shelter, right? And education. All the things that can make life livable in this world, or even pleasurable, are attained through money or wealth. And therefore, that's a basic aspiration that people have. I have to make a certain amount of money. Now, in order to do that, in this Western culture, I was always taught, well, you have to get a good education. So that's another goal, right? That you're going through school, and you have, I have to ace this test, this quiz, this next. And therefore, that becomes an intermediary goal. And you see how you have all of these artas leading up to the other intermediary arta of a degree, which then gets you a good job, which gets you the money, which is the thing that you're really looking for. So there's a whole series of things that you value that bring you to what you were really looking for, which is a happy, peaceful, secure life in this world, full of loving relationships and security. Let's say that's a standard goal that people want to have. Now, many millions and even billions of people in this world do not have that, but at least it's a goal to strive for. Now, the Krishna consciousness a principle, as explained in books like the Bhagavad Gita, has a whole different orientation for what is valuable. Now, why is that? Because the Bhagavad Gita, the teachings of the Bhagavad Gita, begin with an explanation that we are not actually this body. These other goals that we just described, they all have a relationship to your identity in this world based on your body and your relationship with the body. Think about it, right? We're sitting here in the United States. That in itself is a great goal of people, just to come to the United States. There are many people south of the border, just 20 miles from here, who would love to be sitting here peacefully and have a nice apartment or house to go to, right? But there's 1.5 billion Chinese. Many, many of them, they collect so much money just to try to come to America, to work in a sweatshop in New York somewhere for another 10 years to pay it off. So just being in the United States and being in San Diego, among the United States, we're practically already on the heavenly planet. Here. We've achieved so much that people are, but that's not a goal of ours. We're already here. We have other goals that we have, you see. So this is all of this business of of using your present identity, which we take for granted, this is what we are, to formulate certain aspirations and goals that we make, all of this is said to be, in our literature, a dream. It's a dream. It's something that ultimately is insubstantial because of this this time factor. The fact that time will eventually destroy all of this value that we put on it. And when we think about it, we know that for sure. And yet we don't live according to that knowledge because we don't have another framework upon which to build an aspiration. And what I mean by that is that if all we know, and this is true of practically everybody in the world, is the sense of identity, the environment that we're born into, the language we speak, the gender we're in, the body we're in, right? This is who we are. This is who we identify with. And therefore, whatever we strive for as a value, as a goal, has to be in terms of that. It makes sense. But that sort of making sense is challenged by the philosophy of the Bhagavad Gita. And what Krishna says at the beginning of this Gita is that avinashi tatad vidyena sarvam idam tatam, which means that which pervades the body, the consciousness, the actual self, is indestructible, while the body itself is destructible. The self has no beginning and no end. We're never born, we'll never die. We will never die. That in itself is a wonderful revelation, if we can have faith in the words of Krishna. That as consciousness, who we really are, we will never cease to exist. We may inhabit different bodies, we may be in different situations, but we as ourselves will never cease to exist. So, but what do we know about that soul, that Atma, that spirit? Practically nothing. If we've learned anything, we learn, oh, we're eternal. But how can we live on that platform? How can we work in that identity? That is the lesson of the Bhagavad Gita. And it culminates in this verse, is that if one learns to live on this, on what we call the spiritual platform, understanding ourselves to be spirit and not matter, changing our whole framework of what our aspiration is and what our value is, then the ultimate result of that is liberation from the bondage of this material world. Liberation from the bondage of a material body. You cannot be happy in this material world because it's temporary. Each of us experiences this. I like to give this example whenever I speak now, because we're getting older. You know, I've been doing this for almost 40 years, and so you can see the arc of your life. You know, and it's easy to see that as you age, you know, those things which you took for granted before, you can't take for granted anymore. Anyone who gets a little older can say that, right? Gradually, your ability to enjoy, to move around, to see, hear, do all those wonderful things, digest food, right? It gradually goes down. It's not a mystery. It happens. So if you have no other sense of identity and you're thinking you're this body, you're thinking, oh my God, all that makes life worth living, right? Enjoying the senses, eating nice food, being able to travel, being able to run and play and jump and do all those things in sports. Gradually, your ability to do all these things day by day is decreasing. And therefore, I'm becoming less able to do all these things. Therefore, my life is restricting what to do. You know. Now, most people in this, we go into denial. Or we try to hold back the clock, right? The Botox comes out. No more wrinkles, right? Or, you know, there's so many things. Most of you know there's something called the baby boom generation. I'm part of that baby boom generation. You're born between the end of World War II and about 55. There's about 10 years there, okay? 60 million of us. Because all the men came back from the war and they had children. You know, the wives were sitting at home. Suddenly there's a lot of babies being born between those years. So we're kind of working our way through, right? Working our way through the generation. So now there's a huge market in, you know, longevity, you know, keeping your health, you know, the 60s and 70s. You don't have to get old, you know, and they show some guy who's in great shape, he's 70 years old or 60, 70. You know. So, but it's really hopeless. There's no way of stopping this clock. This is inevitable for all of us. So that becomes something of value, you know, trying to hold on to this youthful energy and so forth. But it's fruitless. It's a dream. It's a phantasmagoria. But Krishna, in the Bhagavad Gita, he promises through this process of yoga that you can come in touch with your actual identity as a spirit. And spirit never ages, eternally youthful. The supreme example of the youthful spirit is Krishna himself. You see? We're persons. We're not just indifference. We're eternal persons that are now expressing our personhood through this limited body, which has a cell to date, you know, it has an expiration date. You know? But we ourselves are eternal youthful persons, full of activity and love and joy and peace and all those wonderful things that you really can't attain here are there in relation to Krishna. And when we begin to discover Krishna consciousness, that feeling, that sense of value, which it's so wonderful, even though you're getting older, your value is not depending on anything physical or even mental. It only depends on your relationship you have with the Supreme Spirit, the Supreme Spiritual Person. And that you can genuinely feel in your life. And so, our great teacher, Prahlad Maharaj. Prahlad was the son of a big demon, but he himself was a great devotee of Krishna. And he explained in his teachings to his father, he tried to teach his father, who was a great atheist, that he should give it up and he should actually worship God. But his father wasn't having any of it. And so he said, Nate vadu svartakatimi vishnum dodashayahe baharatam anina. That those who cannot enter into, have some faith in these teachings, and who are determined to try to the end, to the last moment of life, to try to enjoy the senses and deny there's anything supreme, they cannot understand that the real arta, this word is there, nate vadu svarta, swarta means your goal of the soul, if you will, is actually Vishnu or Krishna. And so they have so many goals, external goals. I explained some of them. Good education, security in this world, happiness, health, good insurance in case something happens. Right? You can make a whole list. And the more money you have, the more the list adds. You have $1 million. Oh, now I have all this, many more things that I have on my list that I need, that I want. If you have $1,000, the list is much shorter. But in any case, there's a big list. And lo and behold, your resources never can actually match that list. There's always more. There's always more and more and more that you think you need. And ultimately, you're defeated. Defeated in your attempt to be happy and secure in this world. There is none. I'm sorry, it is a dream. The American dream. Yeah, it will remain a dream forever. It will never be a reality. There'll never be happiness and security in this world. So, Prahlad Maharaj is saying here that there are all these external goals for those who don't understand the real goal of the soul, which is religion, tying back up, yoga, reuniting with the Supreme in service and love for eternity. That's the goal. And all of the other things come naturally. The security, the happiness, you see, the love, the joy, all of that follows from that. You try to get it separate from yoga, you'll never get it. It is impossible through the material energy. So he goes on to say, now, in this endeavor to find these things here, we will find someone to and books and teachings that will increase our understanding in that way. In other words, those who don't understand this truth will also propagate their understanding of the truth, which is wrong, and then others will hear it. And what I mean is, like, you go through school, or you read books of philosophy, or you meet with others, and your attempt to achieve these external goals is enhanced. Your idea that this is what is valuable. We are here in what we call satsang. You know, everyone knows satsang. Sat is a shortened word of sadhu, sadhu sangha. The only reason for this building to exist and this gathering to exist is to understand this knowledge and to act on it, to engage in activities of worship of the Supreme, and so that we can become purified and engage in this path. We're not here to discuss the stock market. We're not here to discuss comics. They have that, Comic-Con. You know, it's a conference of people who are interested in comics. That's a different kind of sangha, comic sangha, right? And they increase I had a great time. I learned so much about this comic, that comic, right? So you go and you're already interested and you get more interested because you associate with people. So there's all kinds of sangha. We have to choose our association wisely. This sangha, this association, the Internet Society for Krishna Consciousness, can give you the greatest thing of value. That's the whole idea. More valuable than billions of dollars. What is that thing of value? It is the holy name of Krishna. It could be concentrated in that. You can learn here who I am, what my real value in life, my goal of life is really, and how to achieve it. Not some subsidiary goal, subsidiary thing of value. You may learn how to achieve that, but it won't fully satisfy you. Ultimately, it will be like sand going through your fingers because of the force of time. Whatever you achieve in this lifetime, along this path of bhakti yoga, stays with you. It stays with you in your next lifetime. You remember? The soul is eternal. That means there must be a future life, and there's a past life. So whatever we can gain on this path, we may not go 100%. It's difficult. But it's in our eternal bank account. On the material side, whatever you gain, you have to leave it. You can't take it with you. I mean, whether you're Bill Gates or some poor guy in the street, you know, with 25 cents in his pocket, he can't take it, neither can Bill Gates or anyone else. Right? So what's really of value? That which can bring you closer and closer to the ultimate goal is paramam siddhim. Siddhi means perfection. Another great acharya or teacher in our line is Narada Muni. Narada Muni, he has the bhakti shakti. Wherever he goes, he can infuse this inspiration to practice bhakti yoga in people. He's the original Krishna conscious traveler, you know. Prabhupada called him transcendental spaceman. He can go between planets, not just on this planet. So, what does he say? In the beginning of this Bhagavad Purana, he says, Tasyaiva heto prayateta kovido nalabhite yad brahmatama pariyata. He says, the wise person, one who is kovida, should strive for that which you cannot attain anywhere in this universe, anywhere in this world or in any other world in this universe. Is it? Because any happiness that you're striving for here is going to come automatically. It's already programmed in from your previous life. This is the famous law of karma. Yes, and it is a law. You know, there is a universal government. Nothing is unseen. Nothing is by accident. And we have a certain amount of happiness, a certain amount of distress that is due to us in this lifetime. So it's futile to try to increase it. Increase the happiness or decrease the distress. It's going to come. Then what should we strive for? Should we just sit back and wait for the karma to come? No. He says you have to strive. Prayateta. Strive strongly. This word prayateta means. For what? That which you cannot achieve here. Because everything is going to come automatically by time and by karma. So what is that? This is this. Paramam siddhim. For the soul to be free of this illusory entanglement in matter and to be firmly fixed in the sense of service to Krishna, which will take us to this world where there's no end. There's simply unlimited happiness forever. And we can read about the details in the books of Srila Prabhupada. It sounds fantastical, you know, because all we know is our little cave here. You know, Plato's cave. You ever seen the analogy? If you're raised in a cave and all you know is these flickering shadows on the wall, then you think this is the full reality. And you'll make distinctions. Oh, this is quite a nice shadow today. You know, yesterday it was much smaller. It's much more interesting now. You know? But someone comes from the outside and says, wait a minute, there's a whole world out there. There's oceans, there's seas, there's all this other world. You won't believe it because it's beyond your experience. So Srila Prabhupada and other ambassadors from this realm who have achieved this Paramam Siddhim, the supreme perfection, they come here and they stay here to give us the good news. This is the gospel. This is the good news about this whole other realm of existence. And if we have a little faith and we try the practice, we'll see that it's becoming more and more real for ourselves. In the next chapter, Krishna uses this word, pratyakshavagamam. Pratyaksha means directly perceivable. You know, the history of science, if you look at it, say the last 200-300 years, is one in which whole vistas of new realities have opened up. They were always there, but they opened up because they were able to increase their ability to perceive. For instance, the microscope. I remember, I don't know why I remember this from all of my, you know, grade school teaching, but this Leeuwenhoek was some Dutch guy. He invented the microscope. It was a little ball of glass, you know, that somehow he looked, oh my goodness, now I can see things I couldn't see before. And he built the microscope, and suddenly you can see all these germs and things going around. No one could see them. You know, they were certainly affecting people, the bacteria and everything, right? So they had some theory of what's making people sick. Maybe it's some ghosts and this or that, a bad spirit. You know, they had all kinds of theories, and they would have doctors who would put leeches on you and stuff like that. You know, this was their medicine. Then he invented the microscope, and suddenly a whole new world opened up. And then they increased it. The power of the microscope, electron microscopes came out in the early 60s or something. A whole new world. Now we can see into the molecules, the atoms. You see? Now, if you try to convince somebody before Leeuwenhoek that there was this world with all of these little bugs in it and everything, say, you're nuts. We never saw that. You know? Right? You can't see that. Or you go to some island. Now, all over the world, right, there are so many TV signals flying back and forth through the satellites. Right? Now, do you go to some island in the South Pacific where they don't know anything about TVs? There's still places like that. Right? And you try to explain to him, you know, there this program, that program, you can see 10,000 miles away, you know. Yeah, uh-huh. Really? Do you mean that we can conjure this up by, you know, with our voodoo or whatever? In other words, you have no way to process it because it's beyond their. But we know, in our, you know, 2010, there is television. We take it for granted. We grew up with it. That's no big deal, you know. But because it's part of our culture, it's part of our knowledge base, if you will. So there are great yogis and seers who have seen this other world, this other reality, and they've come to tell us about it. And they've given us the means, just like someone brings a TV and plugs it in. Oh yes, there's all this stuff. So it's like that. The Prophet said, we all have this TV in our heart. Yeah, and the transmission is coming from the spiritual world, but we have to tune it in. And that tuning process is yoga, bhakti yoga, beginning with the chanting of the holy name. This holy name is the tuning process. Sound is so important, is so powerful. We can become depressed from certain kind of sounds. We can become crazy from certain kind of sounds. We can become knowledgeable from sound. Our teachers giving us so much instruction, right, at all grades. Books are simply recorded sound. You're hearing it in your head, right? Sound is so key. So this particular sound, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, is certified, and it is through experience we have, has the power to open up our vision to this other world of existence. And it's sometimes compared to a medicine that can cure the disease. We have this disease, maybe birth and death, the samsara disease. I have some bad news, along with the good news, that this body itself is our disease. We try to make it as healthy as possible, but ultimately, can you make a disease healthy? Only so far. You know, you can work with it, you know, and mitigate it, but ultimately, it's a fatal disease. It will die. And we will also experience death, but then we'll be reborn in another body. but we'll experience it as long as we're in this material body. So here's this I'm going to just give you this verse, and then we'll maybe have some questions. There's these great teachers in our line. One of them is King Kulashekar. And he wrote like thousands of years ago, even before Lord Chaitanya, and this is in the early, you know, millennium, maybe 500 AD or before that. So he wrote a book called the Mukunda Mala, which means a garland of verses for Mukunda of Krishna. This is the way he titled it. He was a great king, actually, but is also a great devotee. So he says, He lokashunatapa suti madana vyadish chikitsam imam. Yoga gya samadada yanti munayo yang yagibo gya deya. Andar jyoti dame yamekam amitam krishnakim apiyatam tatpitam padamaushadam padanade nirvana matyantikam. Now I especially like this verse because it speaks about two things that are more or less known even before Srila Prabhupada came. At least someone had some idea. Enlightenment and nirvana. Everyone has heard of nirvana. Has anyone not heard the word nirvana? Everyone knows, right? It's an English word by now. You find it in dictionary. I'm a language guy. I work with editing for many, many years. So I'm always conscious of different dictionaries and things. The English language is like a big vacuum cleaner. You know, it'll pull in words from here, from the French, from the Greek, from the Latin, from the Sanskrit. And so many words, nirvana, yoga, you know, even the unabridged dictionary, believe it or not, kshatriya, shudra, they're all there. Or to speak of atma, dharma, of course. So nirvana is long ago entered the language. So here, Kulashekar says, O people of the world, listen to me, shrinuta, I have the medicine to cure the disease of old age, disease, death, and rebirth. And just like we have the FDA, right? If you're going to put a medicine on the market, it has to be proven two things. What are they? Does everyone know what they are? Safe and effective. It can be safe, but it can also be just a placebo. And it can be effective, but it'll give you some side effect you don't want to have. You know. So it has to be safe and effective. So here he's saying, yes, and it's certified as effective and safe by the great yogis headed by Yajnavalkya. He's a famous yogi of ancient times. And all the Munis, they say this. This is good medicine. Take it. So he says, what is this medicine? He says, Antar Jyoti Dameya Meka Mamritam. So Antar Jyoti means internal enlightenment, light. Antar Jyoti Ameyam, unlimited. In other words, all knowledge and enlightenment will come from this. And it's Amritam Ekam. It is the soul, deathless nectar. You know. What is it? Krishnakyam, the name of Krishna. He says like that. This Krishnakyam. So you should drink it. Apiyatam. And having drunk this supreme remedy, Padamaushadam, you will achieve the supreme nirvana. Nirvana matyantika. Nirvana is a state beyond the limits of this matter I was speaking about, in which one is completely enlightened, peaceful, and full of happiness and joy. That's described in that way. It's mentioned in Bhagavad Gita at the end of the second chapter. Nirvana. So here's the promise of this medicine. You take this medicine, and you'll get free of birth and death. In other words, you'll be deathless. That's certainly something interesting. And no more disease, no more old age. And you'll experience ever-increasing unlimited joy and enlightenment, knowledge, within your heart. It's worth investigating. It could be, you know, the quacks, right? They sell all these fake medicines. But here he's saying that the great yogis down the line have taken it, and our spiritual master Srila Prabhupada took it and gave it and showed by his life, experienced it. So what are we going to say? That it's really just a dream? Or are we going to try it? In other words, this is a medicine that you can take as much as you want. The more you take, the more it depends. There's no like dose. Take this and stop. It's never like that with the holy name. The more you take, the better, the more you experience the benefits. And there's no side effects. What's the side effect? You know? The side effects are you're free, you know, 40 years. Like if I had followed the curve, the path, life path of so many of my contemporaries back in the mid-60s when I came of age, I probably would have gone to Vietnam. You know, I turned 18 in 1965. Prime suspect, you know, go to Vietnam. That would, you know, if I survived that, you know, then I come back, all the drugs, all of the, you know, the broken relationships. The some of us survived, but nobody came out unscarred, you know. And but here, you know, 40 years, practically all these 40 years, what's the result? Happily chanting Hare Krishna. You know, I feel great. 62, right? Feel happy. I feel that, you know, that my life has a great, I have this goal, I'm finding this, you know, I have great company. All these nice devotees that I, every morning, get up very early. We sing and dance. They actually say, you know, they do these studies, that they live longer. Those people who pray a lot, who go to church and sing a lot, you know, and they have this way of dealing with stress, you know. Hey, this is it. 5 hours every morning. You're welcome to join, 4:30 to 9:30. You know, we sing, we chant, we have a wonderful, beautiful deities we see every morning, and then we take wonderful, healthy Krishna prasadam. What's not to like? But I'm saying, the point is, I don't think I missed anything. What did I miss? You see? I don't feel I missed anything. And I have the promise that, okay, maybe not this lifetime, but, you know, what's a couple of lifetimes? We've been through millions and millions of them. You know, we'll go to this Paramahamsa Dham. So this comes from taking this medicine of the holy name, and it's full of joy. There's no bad side effects, and if we just try it, both congregationally and also through the individual chanting, the meditative chanting, japa chanting, we're bound to achieve the goals. And of course, there's a proper way of doing it so that one can quickly go on the path and experience the benefits very quickly. So. I've been speaking for a while. If there's any comments or questions on these few points, we can entertain them now. Yes?
So, if our bodies are a disease, then why do we feel a great extent of happiness, but also a great extent of pain?
Why do we feel like that? Well, yeah, okay. I mentioned that the body itself is a disease. And the question was, if our bodies are a disease, then why do we feel a great extent of happiness, but also a great extent of suffering? When I said the body is a disease, I meant the body is a disease for the soul. If we just try to enter into this understanding for a minute, we say, okay, I myself am what we call the Atma. I'm the conscious being who knows... is aware of, say, what my mind is doing, all my thoughts, and I have experiences through the senses. Things that come in, sensations, and also I'm acting with various senses. So all of that I'm aware of. It's called technically the Chaitragya, the knower of the field of activity. So the soul, by nature, is what we call Satchitananda, which means eternal, like the Krishna explains, but also full of consciousness, full of knowledge, and full of bliss, without the downside of unhappiness. That's our nature. But as you so nicely explained, we don't experience that all the time. We have some high points of happiness, no one can deny it, but then we know a downside is coming. We know it from our friends, from experience, or from our own life. So, visualize a graph for a minute. The graph, the horizontal vector is time. And the vertical vector is happiness. Okay. Now, the way that the Vedas explain it, in the material consciousness, the zero point is freedom from all suffering. It's called Brahmananda. We are existing below the zero point, and sometimes we feel a little less suffering, and we go toward that point, and we're feeling happiness, and then we come back down again. So we haven't even come, but above that zero point is the actual ananda, or bliss, which is explained as the bliss of connection with Krishna. It's a loving exchange, which is full of ananda. It's far beyond the realm of absence of all suffering. That's a given. But there's these positive experiences of loving exchange that don't end, that go on forever. And so all we know is what's below the zero point. And so we take it that when we have a little, you know, swing up toward the zero, that, oh, that's good. Now I'm happy. I just experienced something, you know, really happy. But then, you know, we're coming down that point and there's going to be some misery. Part of the misery is just lamenting for the happiness that we lost. Right? We experience something like as you get older, an ordinary person gets older, and what do? I remember when my mother, she died at 97, which is a ripe old age. But for years, her short-term memory was difficult. But she remembered things from many years ago, you know, that she experienced with my father and with me, and she would come and I would talk and we would talk about it. So, but that's gone now. You know, it's this nostalgia, which is like bittersweet, and really you're wishing you could be in it. So your ability to enjoy in the present goes down and down with age. So the point is that the disease of this body restricts, first of all, our understanding of who we really are, our potential for enjoyment. And it periodically gives us these, you know, it's fatal. I mean, the body is fatal, you know, it's fatal disease. Eventually it will die. And then, you know, that's a real difficult thing. We like to put it in denial. But that's not the end of it. Then we go around again to some other body. And if we have no reference point of the Vedas and how to act in this world, then we may be in for a whole lot of suffering because we violate the laws of nature, the laws of God. So that's what I meant by it's a disease. When we understand the standard of real happiness and the standard of this eternal existence, this nirvana existence, then we realize, oh, I don't want to stay in this restricted existence of just being limited by a body. Now, when our body is young, we may, you know, take it, you know, think, well, okay, that's theoretical. But as you start to go through life and you see your contemporaries getting ill or dying, you know, you say, whoa, I'm next in line. You know, is this all there is? This is it. You know, I had this experience when I was young and now I'm heading toward oblivion. You know, so in the Vedic culture, you know, the main, like the given is, no matter what religion you're in, is liberation, mukti. I want to get out of this no-win situation. So that's what I mean by a disease of the body. The body is a disease. Kanka? Is that okay?
Also in the Gita, it describes how the process of bhakti yoga is joyfully performed. So no matter what stage of life you're in, you can use this process to always experience joy because it's cleaning the heart.
Yes. That's true. That's another good part of this medicine. You know, like some medicine or some treatment, there's usually a downside. Like I always, you know, sometimes we used to leaf through the magazines, you know, and there's this ad for, you know, this wonderful medicine, like an antidepressant or something, right? And it's all like green, you know, and everything, and you're looking very happy, you know, like. And then you turn a page and like there's three pages of side effects. Be careful, you know. You could get suicidal thoughts, or you'll lose a kidney or something. And but ask your doctor if Zoloft is right for you, you know. But maybe so there's all of these downsides. But as you say, susukam kartamaviyam. This is in the next chapter, chapter 9. That is also very joyful. Like you if you come in the morning, 4:30 is a bit much. Try to come maybe at 7:15. We have our chanting, and we just chant. We're dancing and chanting. You know, we're happy. But it's the medicine. We're taking the medicine to take us out of this world. So at the same time, it's a joyful process, and it gives us the greatest result. And so as Prabhupada so famously said at the end of this purport in the 9.2, I'll just read this one sentence. So it's really kind of a classic. This is the purport to that verse you just referred to. Thus the process of devotional service, Krishna consciousness, is the king of education, the king of confidential knowledge. It is the purest form of religion, and it can be executed joyfully without difficulty. Therefore, one should adopt it. That's the QED.
You can chant Hare Krishna wherever you are.
Yeah, you can take it as much as you want. In other words, somehow or other, take it. That's the idea. Any other comment or question?
No.
Yes, Prabhu. Yeah.
Prabhu, you mentioned that the original nature of the living entity is full of knowledge.
Yes. Full of bliss and eternal.
Yes, but how so is our original nature is full of knowledge?
Yes. So this is a classic question. It comes up again and again. Because we understand we were once there.
Can you repeat?
Yeah, yes. Okay. The question was the nature of the soul, as I mentioned, is Satchitananda. Eternal, full of happiness, full of bliss. We're obviously not in that situation now. Right? We're not eternal. We're full of ignorance. And we're not we have unhappiness. So how do we get from there to here? Why did we make that decision?
It was a bad decision,
assuming that we were there and experienced. And that is, that is a great mystery. How could we be so stupid, right? Well, here's the answer that our spiritual master gave, okay? Is that we are, as living beings, we have part of Krishna's qualities in minute degree, infinitesimal. We're infinitesimal spirit souls, this is the Atma. And that's the Paramatma, he has infinite powers. So one of the powers that the Krishna has is free will, right? And his free will is supreme. Whatever he wills, that will come to be. We also have minute free will. Because what is going on there? There, I mentioned the word love. Now here, love is pretty much a mystery. We think we know what love is. But love really means this, just in a general definition, is caring for another person and wishing that they'll be happy. Now, Krishnagas Kaviraj, one of our great teachers, he says that real love or prema is to work for the pleasure of Krishna's senses. Now, don't forget, we're part and parcel of Krishna. That's one of the main things. We are conscious beings, he's the supreme conscious being. So when we work for the pleasure of Krishna, we become happy because we're part and parcel of Krishna. When we turn away from that, we want to be the enjoyer. Now, how we made that stupid decision is somewhat of a mystery. But we have that free will. That love is not love if it's coerced. Love has to be freely given. You can force someone to serve you, but you can't force someone to love you, right? So Krishna doesn't want that kind of service. He wants it to be freely given. That's what gives him pleasure. We have the freedom to withhold that. When we do, and we want to be the center of attraction and the one who served, that's called turning away, turning our back, on Krishna. And we're given this world in which we can play at being the Lord and the controller and the enjoyer. And we can see what has gotten us. We're no longer Satchidananda. So why would we leave that? Because we somehow or other, out of envy, we wanted to try to be Krishna instead of serve Krishna. So now, does it really matter? The answer is that we have to get back there. We have to wake up from this illusory identity that we're somehow matter. We're not. We're spirit. And to learn what the function of matter is, which is service to Krishna. And the way of doing that is bhakti yoga, and the central practice is chanting the holy name. Anyone else? Yes, one more guy. No, there is. No, a very good question. The question was, there's a phrase called Jivan Mukta, which refers to someone in this world who is actually liberated. And how does that work? Well, there's a verse. There's a little verse about that that our spiritual master would often quote. Iha yasya harir dasi karma nama nasagira nikalavashavastastu Jivan Mukta sauchite. So the word iha here means activities. Or if all of one's activities of what? Karma, nama, nasagada, the senses, the mind, and the voice, this is basically everything, are engaged in the service of Hari, or Krishna, then one is said to be Jivan Mukta. That means liberated even in this world. Because liberation doesn't mean that the body has to fall. Liberation means that you're no longer bound by this false identity. That you're no longer thinking, this is my body, it's made for my pleasure, and things in relation to the body are mine. Rather, the body, the senses, the mind, everything we have, is a tool, is a facility for connecting with Krishna, for serving Krishna. Now we find, wait a minute, what about me? If I serve Krishna, what about me? Don't forget, we're part and parcel of Krishna. When you serve Krishna, you serve your real self. When you become conscious of Krishna, you understand who you really are. When you forget Krishna and you try to serve your senses, you're serving the other. You're serving that which is not you. You're not your senses. You're not your body. That's the central theme here. So Jivan Mukta is simply the pure devotee. the unalloyed devotee of Krishna, who every moment of every day is always thinking, is conscious of Krishna and the service to Krishna. And lo and behold, you find yourself blissful, full of knowledge, and you know that your life is eternal in the spiritual world. One more.
I think you are the jiva.
I'm not a jiva. I wish I were.
You're my neighbor. I know.
That's because I don't make any noise upstairs, so you can keep quiet. Hare Krishna. 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 Hare Krishna.